So with this particular talk, I'd like to talk about how cover crop mixture diversity may or may not affect wheat suppression that is independent of its effects on biomass productivity. And as before, because I like consistency, I want to open with two quotes. The first comes to us from Charles Elton, and he wrote, "Simple communities of plants and animals are more vulnerable to invasions." And this is considered by a lot of people as one of the earliest articulations of what is frequently called the diversity invasibility hypothesis. And that's the hypothesis that more diverse systems are less invasible than less diverse systems. And to put it in more agronomic or agricultural terms, more diverse systems are more weed suppressive than less diverse systems. And so this is one of the hypotheses I want to test today. The other quote I want to share with you comes again from Darwin in The Origin of Species. And he wrote, "As a species of the same genus, usually have much similarity in habits and constitution, always in structure, the struggle will generally be more severe between them than between the species of distinct genera." And this is considered by a lot of people as one of the earlier articulations of what's now called the competition relatedness hypothesis. That is the hypothesis that species which are more similar compete with each other more severely than species which are not so similar. And a lot of people have taken this hypothesis and applied it into a plant invasion context to say, well, in that case, species which are alike should repel each other more severely than species which are unlike. So the specific research question I want to explore with this talk is, how does plant mixture diversity affect weed suppression? And specifically, I want to know, does it increase weed suppression as it's predicted by the diversity invasibility hypothesis? And two, do like species repel like species as is predicted by the competition relatedness hypothesis, at least in some interpretations of that hypothesis? So as for the motivation behind this project, the why do we want to know the answers to these questions, I would say to inform cover crop management. I'm hoping that by the end of this talk that I'll be able to help you answer these two questions for yourselves and perhaps cover crop managers. So the first one is, will a more diverse cover crop help me to suppress weeds better, that is, than a less diverse cover crop? And then the second question is, say I know what kind of weed problem I have, can I use the competition relatedness hypothesis to help me pick a cover crop to suppress it? And so the way I've structured this question for this project is, should I use a grass cover crop to control grass weeds or a broadleaf cover crop to control broadleaf weeds? So a lot of you were here for my previous talk, and it's the same exact study, so I hate to be too redundant here, so I'll go over this very briefly. Studies in southeast Nebraska over the course of 2 years, one site in 2013, we'll call that site A, two sites in 2014, we'll call those sites B and C. Planting dates are in late August and late July. Number of species in the first year was 9, and the second year we doubled that up to 18. Number of treatments, 20 in the first year, 40 in the second year. Number of replications, 4 everywhere except for at site C, where we only did 3 replications. And then sampling dates were 61, 69, and 84 days after planting. Then the 18 species. Now I'm going to organize these 18 species a little bit differently than I did for my last talk, because we're looking at grasses versus broadleaves. So we had 6 grass species: barley, oats, wheat, proso millet, sorghum sedan grass, teff. But then we had 12 broadleaf species. 6 of them were legumes: winter pea, red clover, sweet clover, chickpea, cowpea, and sun hemp. 3 of which were brassicas, radish, rapeseed, turnip, and then 3 of which were neither legumes nor brassicas: buckwheat, safflower, and sunflower. Again, we had our 40 treatments. 1 was a no-cover control, and we used this as our weedy baseline. So this is the plot which we used to calculate percent weed yield loss for all the other cover crop treatments. Then we had 18 treatments, which were each of our 18 species in monoculture. That left 21 of the remaining treatments to be the mixture treatments. As for the levels of diversity, we planted 3, 6, 9, and 18-way mixes. We used what I'll call proportional seeding rates. So for a 3-way mixture, I planted at 1/3 the recommended full rate for each of the 3 species. And then again, each species was equally represented at each level of diversity. So one of the things that I want to spend some time on in discussing the methodology for this project was the statistical analysis we used. And I want to do that for 2 reasons. One of the reasons is because I think it's fairly novel in terms of how the diversity invasibility hypothesis and the competition related this hypothesis is typically tested. And secondly, because to really understand our results and the correct interpretation of our results, you need to know how we reach them statistically speaking. So the thing that I think we did that was rather novel was that we took into account the effect of productivity on invasibility. And to couch it in agronomic terms,
and the cover crop example specifically, we took into account the fact that as you increase cover crop biomass, you typically increase weed suppression, or as I have up here, weed yield loss. And so what happens in a lot of diversity and invasibility studies is something like this, and this is a bit of a simplified example. They might take, for example, a monoculture that does not produce a whole lot of biomass, determined to not be very weed suppressive, then compare it to a mixture which produces a lot of biomass, determined to be quite weed suppressive, and then conclude that the diversity and invasibility hypothesis has been supported. And when I see this in the literature, I think all you've shown is that when something's more productive, it's more weed suppressive. It has nothing to do with diversity. Because you could very easily have picked another monoculture, which is more productive, or you could have doubled, tripled, quadrupled the seeding rate of your monoculture and made it more productive, and come up with the opposite conclusion, right? So the way that we've analyzed our data is we've framed the diversity invasibility hypothesis this way, is that as you increase cover crop species richness, do you increase weed suppressiveness on a per unit biomass basis? So this is conceptually what we did, what were the kind of the statistical mechanics underneath it. Essentially what I did was I fit a null model in which the only input variable was cover crop biomass, and then I compared it to an alternate model which added diversity as an additional input variable. So I essentially used the same approach for the competition relatedness hypothesis, so that the same criticisms I levied earlier for how diversity and invasibility hypothesis is typically tested relate here as well. So for example, when looking at grass weed yield loss, I framed the hypothesis this way, that grass cover crops should be more suppressive than broadleaf cover crops on a per unit biomass basis, and then vice versa for broadleaf weed yield loss. And again, the statistics behind it are very similar. Fit a null model in which biomass is your only input variable, and then test an alternate model in which you add cover crop type as an additional input variable. So that was the approach. What have we found? Well, we found one, increasing diversity did not increase weed suppression. And two, grass and cover crops and broadleaf cover crops were equally suppressive of grass weeds and broadleaf weeds. And then you see that little asterisk there. It's to remind us that we're talking about on a per unit biomass basis, and that makes all the difference in interpreting this data, I think. So let's look at the data. First, let's look at how increasing diversity did not increase weed suppression. So here are three sites going A, B, C, left to right. On the x-axis, we have cover crop biomass. On the y-axis, we have weed yield loss. And then the plotting points indicate the cover crop species richness, with the black plotting points indicating the monocultures, and with increasing kind of blueness there, that's increasing cover crop species richness. And the models you see fit through those data points represent each of the null models for each of those data sets, none of which were improved by the adding of species richness to the model. And it's kind of easiest to visualize on the right panel, site C, as you can see that there doesn't appear to be a pattern between cover crop species richness and weed yield loss once we take into account variations in cover crop biomass. So that's the first point. Here's the second point, specifically with grass weeds. Grass cover crops and broadleaf cover crops were equally suppressive of them. So same thing going on here. We've just changed our y-axis to grass weed yield loss, and then our green plotting points represent our grass cover crops, our orangish plotting points represent our broadleaf cover crops, and again, none of the null models was improved by adding cover crop type. And it's, again, easiest to visualize with site C here on the right. There doesn't appear to be a pattern between whether or not a cover crop is a grass or a broadleaf when it comes to suppressing grass weed. So how about broadleaf weeds? Well, we only had broadleaf weeds at site B, but the same pattern held true, that once you took into account variations in cover crop biomass, there really wasn't any difference in the suppression of broadleaf weeds by grass cover crops or broadleaf cover crops. So again, I'd like to end with two take-home messages. The first one is this, is that increasing diversity is not going to increase weed suppression for you. And then the second is that increasing the similarity of your cover crop to your weed doesn't equate increased weed suppression. And again, that asterisk to remind us that we're talking about things on a per unit biomass basis. If you don't do that, you might come up with a slightly different conclusion. And because I like quotes and I like symmetry, I wanted to end on a quote. This one comes to us from Conrad Lorenz, and he said, "It's a good morning exercise for research scientists to discard a pet hypothesis every day before breakfast to keep them young." And I'm conscious of our position here right before lunch. So one of the things that I want to encourage you to do as you leave today is to really think about challenging the diversity invasibility hypothesis and the competition relatedness hypothesis in the context of plant mixtures, specifically in the context of cover crops and weed suppression. So thanks so much.
Okay, questions for Angela?
Do you think that maybe the ability of the cover crop to interfere with weed growth is confounded with your biomass production?
So, do I think the ability, could you repeat that, please?
Well, the two traits are you got biomass production and ability to interfere with weed growth. Aren't those confounded? In other words, as somebody who's pulled a lot of weeds, when you have something that interferes with weed growth, maybe it's got an allelopathic effect or it's doing something else. If it truly interferes with the weed growth, it'll put out a lot of biomass. So if you have something that puts out a lot, there's a bit confounded there. But I guess that's the question I would pose. Are they confounded? I think they are, but maybe I'm wrong.
I'm still not quite sure that I follow. Is the ability of a cover crop to put on biomass related to
it? By separating out the biomass effect, you may be taking out the interference with it. So that you don't recognize the interference.
Right. So the reason that I took out the biomass was to, in a way, account for it and control for it so that we could evaluate the effect of diversity.
I'm just saying perhaps if, let's say, I have a cover crop that's allelopathic to the weeds, it interferes with the weed growth by virtue of its allelopathy. Because it suppresses the weeds, it puts on a lot more biomass.
Oh, I follow. Okay, so I think I follow.
Now, statistically, I take the biomass out of the equation. I also lost the interference effect. So maybe you need to, I would just say you might think about that. Maybe there's another way to look at it. Or maybe you can't really separate the 200%. Because whatever interferes with weed growth is going to give you more biomass.
Right, they feed into each other. I understand the question now. If something is more weed suppressive, then as a consequence, it's going to put on more biomass. And so it's not a simple question of A causes B, but A affects B affects A.
Right.
If
you separate out the biomass effect, you may be losing statistically, you may have lost some of your interference.
Right, that's a really good point. I'll have to think about it. Thank you.
Which weeds were the most frequent in your trials?
Overwhelmingly, they were lamb's quarters. And then Kenopodium album, and then a lot of the Amaranthus species, and then a lot of the Malvaceae species. Mm-hmm. And then with the grasses, a lot of the Cetaria species, the foxtails.
Mm-hmm. Okay, before we thank Angela, just want to make note, we break for lunch now and reconvene at 1 o'clock, and we can address any other questions you have for any other speakers, but let's thank Angela for her presentation.